Hello, everyone.
Hey,
it's us, and we're back.
This is episode 77 of Catnaps and Cognac.
Meow.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
Awesome.
Well, we're your hosts. I'm Arielle.
And I'm Dee Dee. And again, we want to welcome you to episode 77. If you are a return listener, thank you so much for coming back. We really appreciate it. And if this is your first time catching our show, thank you for joining us. And we would hope that you would go back and check out the other 76 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's a lot of good stuff. Chock full of good stuff. You'll see. Once you finish listening to this episode, I know you're going to run to go back and go listen to it. I already know it.
I would have to agree. We're psychic.
So how are you, Ari?
I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little PO'd.
Oh no, what's wrong?
When's the last time you ever heard someone say that? I'm a little PO'd. So, remember how we talked about the Naked Settlement a long time ago?
Yeah.
Sometime last year, and you know, I signed up for it because I used to drink Naked all the time, right. But who knew I was supposed to save all my freaking receipts?
What?
Right, so I'm thinking, because I think it said, like, the least that you can get was, like, $75. I'm like, I'll take $75.
Right.
So how about I check the mailbox today, and looks like it's been in there for a while. I don't check my mailbox. Whatever. I'm like, oh, wow, the Naked Settlement. It's here. Girl, I opened this shit. It is $8.57.
$8.57.
This is like enough for two Naked juices if I was still buying them.
Right.
I'm a little PO'd.
I can completely understand your PO'dness. How dare they?
The nerve.
Ugh.
So, thanks Pepsi. F you.
For the $8.57.
Or whoever owns it.
You know what? That could barely buy you two, actually.
Barely.
Because the places that sell Naked juice, because you can't readily find that at the bodega. You gotta go to one of the nice stores to get it. And they be charging $4 for one.
Ridiculous. So, yeah. In a perfect world, I would have saved this for grinding my gears, but I couldn't wait. I was mad.
You gotta let out the steam as it comes. You don't want to hold that in.
If I could just let out steam like Popeye, I would be all set.
That would be great. Have you ever been that mad where you felt like your ears get hot? Have you ever been that mad?
Yeah.
I recently felt that way. Well, not recently. It wasn't like yesterday. Maybe about like 3 years ago. It was like the first time that I ever got so mad that I felt my ears hot. And I was like, oh my God, I am steaming mad. I'm upset.
I think because with me in particular, like I tend to bottle my anger. Mm-hmm. So whenever I do get angry, like that's really the first thing that like gets hot besides like my arms feeling hot and everything like that are my ears.
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah. But how are you?
I'm not doing too bad. That's all I can say. I didn't send any requests to get money back from Pepsi or whoever the hell owns Naked Juice. However, that is very upsetting to get that into the mail. Very upsetting.
Right. I mean, at least this can buy, now this Naked Juice check can buy a bottle of wine.
Well, you right. Do you have an app for your bank for you to do mobile check deposits?
Uh-uh.
Oh, man. I was going to say, you don't even have to go to the bank. You could just do it right there.
I know, right?
Go get you a bottle of wine. Or you could, actually, it could get you, if you go to Trader Joe's, however, you may not be drinking anymore because of the whole propaganda with the mice and the bugs and whatever.
No. I will.
Okay. Well, that could get you two bottles of wine to Trader Joe's.
Right.
So, two bottles of decent wine. I don't care what y'all say. Y'all can say anything you want about Trader Joe's wine. It's delicious. And the alcohol that's in the wine already killed whatever whatever's in there. So, thank you very much, Trader Joe's. How rude. I'm so upset with those people.
How rude.
How rude.
How rude. No. This is funny.
Why would that uppity American people, I guess, speak with that accent?
How do uppity Americans speak with bad accents?
Like Frasier. No, yeah. they speak with that accent. Like
I don't know. It's like, where the hell did he get this from?
Right, because it's not an English accent.
And he's not even British. Right. Like, in real life.
I don't even know. Well, you know what? We're going to be talking about somebody later on, and we're going to do this. We're going to talk about that later.
I love when Frasier gets so flustered, and he's, oh, Niles. And it's, how did both of his kids get that? And like looking at his dad, oh my gosh.
Right.
Oh, Niles.
Oh my gosh. You know what? In Cheers, he always said his parents were dead.
What?
Yeah. So there's like he didn't have like any family or whatever. So for them to like reprise this role into a different character and then have Martin play his dad. But like on Cheers, he said that both his parents were dead, and I believe he didn't have any siblings either. But they like tried to like make up for it on Frasier, and when I forget the name, the guy, Ted Danson, I forget what his character's name is called. Mm-hmm. I think Charlie or whatever. When he came to visit, he was like, I thought you told your parents were dead.
Oh.
Yeah, so they kind of like tried to fix it. And he was like, oh, well, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know how he is. Well, you know, Charlie, blah, 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 blah. You know how he gets when he gets close.
That's funny.
Yeah. So, I guess we should get into current events.
Yes, let's get into current events.
All right, what you got?
So, Ferguson, obviously, it's still going on. Right. I don't see it slowing down or news in Ferguson anytime soon.
Yeah.
But now Obama has done a second press conference, technically about it, even though, you know, he put some other stuff in there. And I wasn't really feeling what he had to say.
What did he say? I didn't see it.
Pretty much, I think the thing that stuck out to me about what he said was that he goes, black people steal and they should be prosecuted for it. And,
what?
That was like what I pretty much got stuck on. Like, I couldn't believe.
Black people steal?
Okay, he goes, there are young black men that commit crime. And we can argue about why that happens because of the poverty they were born into or lack of opportunity or the school systems that fail them or what have you. But if they commit crime, then they need to be prosecuted because every community has an interest in public safety. The problem that I have with that is every race commits crime. Like, what was the point in him saying that?
Right.
Like, I don't know. Like, I really feel like he could have done a better job at really talking about what's going on in Ferguson. Like, I felt like what he was saying kind of pushed the problem on to black America versus just this is a problem in America with right. police brutality.
Right.
Police brutality, like, that's real. There was a statistic that just came out, like, yesterday that for police departments who actually submit their stats out of like the 18,000 police departments in the United States, that for the last 7 years, a white cop has killed a black person twice a week for 7 years. That's insane.
That is crazy.
That's insane. Like, this is a real problem. And the fact that he's, like, pushing it onto us, that makes it a big problem for me.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Like, to me, it just really hurts. Like, he's not really, like, I understand that he's a president. I understand that he's, you know, I don't know, supposed to be politically correct or whatever. But, like, this is a problem when, like, four instances in the past month where someone has died at the hands of police. Just four in a month alone, that's gained national attention.
Right.
And he's like, well, we have my brother's keeper, and what my brother's keeper does, like, it's a mentorship program. And it's like, the problem isn't that we're not being mentored. Even that's like a separate issue. It's the problem that these police officers are killing people, killing black people rampantly. Like, this is Call of Duty, and we're like, we're sick of it. Like, why can't our president really talk about that?
Yeah, this is something that's really been bothering me, and it's just like, I mean, you know, a lot of people, when they saw that there was an African-American on the bill to vote for, and was somebody who said that he was going to be the change, we believed him.
Mm-hmm.
And we really believed that he was going to be the change, I mean, you know, for us. You know, not to say that he should only be doing things for black people, of course not. But we were hoping that he was going to be the voice for the black people that has been muted for so long in this country, being that he is the leader of the free world. And it's just that every single time he's confronted with anything that has to do with race, he kind of just like skips around it.
Right.
And never really tackles the issue. And that gives me great pause, because I don't understand it. Like, dog, we put you in office so that you could, like, no, we are tired of you guys slaughtering black Americans. This is the reason why we can't get to college and have good jobs, because we're dying before we can even get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it's just, it's weird to me. I don't know if there's any conspiracies. I don't know if he's a Stepford president. I don't know. Like, you know, somebody else is just like, you know, pulling the strings or whatever, and he's just a puppet. That definitely is what could it be, or what it could be. So, yeah, it's really upsetting.
Yeah.
You know?
It's like, it's completely upsetting. And just to hear him, like, it's like, this isn't the first time he's done this. Like, he can praise other people in other countries, but when it comes to us, and like, I know we're not perfect, because no one's perfect, and I know we have problems in our community. Everyone has problems in their community. But it's like, when it comes to black Americans, it's just like, y'all gotta do better. We need fathers. And it's like, okay,
y'all not even allowing us to do better because that boy is supposed to be going to school this week.
Right, like, that was it? Like, that's what you want to tell us? Like, you're coming to a commencement speech and telling us, like, y'all better be fathers to your children because, what? Okay.
No.
Okay, like, y'all should have just got Steve Jobs to do the job, because clearly he knows how to make a commencement speech. You know what I'm saying? It's very upsetting.
And at this point right now, him saying these kind of things, or trying to do these kind of things, like, dog, you're not up for a re-election. You can't be re-elected. So
right.
You need to do what you got to do before you get out. You got to do what you got to do. Now is the time to make the power moves. Maybe your first term, you were kind of scared and hesitant because you were like, look, I'm trying to get re-elected. So, you know, I'm a chill for a little bit. But no. Now is the time to act, buddy. Like, you're in there, make it happen. But I know there's checks and balances and there's things. He can't just do whatever he wants or whatever.
Right. I mean, no one's asking him to do whatever he wants.
Yeah,
but
we definitely want at least your verbal support, like, to show us, like, you know what? I'm trying to do the best I can do. I don't feel that he's trying to do the best that he can do.
I don't feel like he is either.
When it comes to this,
right.
I'm not discounting everything that President Obama has done, not at all.
No.
But when it comes to racial issues and conflicts that we have, like, I just really don't feel that he steps to the, you know, to the plate.
Race is one of the, if not the biggest controversial topic that we could talk about. More so to me than, like, gay rights or women's rights. Like, race is always, like, the top.
Yeah.
So it's like, why wouldn't you want to have your stance on it, or, like, to say something? Like, you're black. Like,
right.
Like, what's going on?
Doesn't this bother you? Like, I don't know. Again, I'm not inside President Obama's head. I don't know why he does the things that he does. he may be, you know, sick about it. We wouldn't know because he's telling us that, you know, when black people commit crimes, they got to go to jail for it. Like, okay, we get it. We're not saying that we don't want criminals to go to jail.
Right.
Of course we want the criminals to go to jail. But however, we don't want the innocent people going to jail or getting killed.
Right.
That's what we exactly don't want.
So he sent the Attorney General, Eric Holder, to Ferguson on Wednesday. And pretty much he said kind of what, well, he said what I would have wanted Obama to right. say. So he said, I understand that mistrust. I'm the Attorney General of the United States, but I'm also a black man. And he talked about his own experience when he was racially profiled before. He said, we've seen a great deal of progress over the years, but we also see problems, and these problems stem from the mistrust and mutual suspicion. I can remember being stopped on the New Jersey Turnpike on two occasions and accused of speeding. Pulled over, let me search your car, go through the trunk of my car, look under the seats, and all this kinds of stuff. I remember how humiliating that was and how angry I was and the impact it had on me. So he was saying, like, yo, like, I am a federal attorney and this has happened to me. Like, I'm a federal attorney and that still happens to me. So I feel like maybe if President Obama could at least shown that we all want to relate to somebody.
Right.
At the end of the day. And I felt like if he was the least bit relatable, then it could have been like, okay, well, at least he understands what's going on a little bit. Or at least he feels our pain because he can still relate to us or whatever. He didn't even give any examples of, like, his dad or, like, anything. It was just like, it was pretty much like, well, y'all deal with this. I'm still half white. I gotta go through. Like, I don't know. Like, that's how.
I don't know either. Yeah.
That's how I really felt.
Like I said, there's something in my spirit that's making me think that there is something that's keeping him from saying these things. Mm-hmm. And then for Eric Holder to say it, to me, I feel like he may be setting himself up to go to a different area of politics to gain support. That's what it all feels like to me. Mainly because I've watched so many dumb political shows, Scandal, House of Cards, all this other stuff. Like, these people are very calculated in the things that they say and the things that they put out on, you know, into the media. So there's something going on here, and as to the reason why Barack Obama is not showing the support that we would like him to. And for him to say that, you know, like, why would you put that, as a black man, why would you put that into your speech that, oh, well, when black people commit crimes, they got to go to jail for them. Why would you put that in there?
Yeah, like, what purpose did that serve in this whole conversation? Like, right. No black man went to jail in this conversation, like, in this situation. Like, that right. didn't happen. Like, right. why would you even fix your mouth to even say that?
That's the thing. So it's just, like, it's really weird to me. Something is just really fishy here about it all.
Right.
But I'm just hoping that the investigation that they do is thorough. This guy, Darren Wilson, is still not arrested. I wonder if they even know where he is.
Well, supposedly he did, like, an interview or something like that with, I want to say the FBI. I'm not sure. I can't be totally certain about that. But he does have to talk to someone about the situation.
He definitely does. And I was reading somewhere, this could be hearsay as well, but I was reading somewhere where they were saying how, like, you know, they're not going to be able to get full evidence and stuff to the grand jury until October.
Why?
I don't know. That's what I just read.
Is the jury so grand they can't do something now?
Right. It was something, I don't know. Because, you know, it has to go to a grand jury first before they can charge the person. So whatever evidence and stuff that they need to collect, that it wasn't going to be able to all be able to come together to bring to a grand jury to decide if they should charge this man with whatever kind of murder until October. But that was, like I said, it could be hearsay. I don't know if that's true. I just saw it in passing. I didn't even open it because I couldn't do it anymore. I'm so burnt out with it all. And not to say that I don't want justice. I definitely do. But but it's just taken a toll on me. It really has.
Yeah.
And
this whole case is different.
Yeah. And people are talking about it
nonstop,
24/7. And it's good. They should be talking about it, but don't fault me for wanting to take a break from it. And so I was just like, you know what? Let me just stay off of Twitter. And then I came onto Twitter and they were talking about breakfast foods. And I was like, oh, finally, a conversation that's more light. I'll definitely participate in this, but I can't do, it's just so sad. The whole situation is just, it's just so upsetting and so sad. And I just want justice for this. I really want this to be the time where we win. I really do.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping that, you know, Eric Holder will stay true to his promise and will have a full investigation conducted and we will get justice. It's we now. It's not just Mike Brown's family. It's we. It's all of us. This mm-hmm. is something for all of us. It'll really set a precedent because with Trayvon Martin, when that happened, they just let the man go. It was just like, what?
Right. Sean Bell. 50 times. This is like, it's unrealistic. It's just really hard to fathom. It's hard for me to grasp. Like,
okay. Exactly. You gotta let it all out because it's just causing so much tension and so much stress. I feel like I don't want to say that my feelings or how I feel is anything in comparison to Mike Brown's family, but I really do feel connected. Like I feel like this little boy was my little brother, and they shot him down in the street. Mm-hmm. It's just like, damn, what can we do? Like, bruh, if I could be out in Ferguson right now, if I could do anything, if I could send money, I would do it. It was just right now, I'm not capable of doing those kind of things, but I want to do as much possible as I can to have us, you know, have justice be served. Like, it's just, all I can do right now is just send up my prayers that everything will, you know, that the Lord and God will make it happen and, you know, and we will get justice. Right. That's all I can do right now. But it's just like, it's definitely us now. It's not, we've all, and I do love the way that everybody has come together about this. I love the way that we've come together about it. There's no, you know, there's no crass jokes, or I haven't seen any. No crass jokes. Like, we are really serious about it, and we really want things to change, and we want things to happen in Ferguson. And what will happen in Ferguson will really set the tone for the rest of America and the rest of the way that we, or for the rest of us in America and how we're treated.
We need some good news.
We definitely do.
So what's our good news?
So I have some good news. So I don't know if you guys have heard, but right now it's the Little League World Series, which is so, I think that's adorable that there's a Little League World Series. So we've got Monet Davis. She is an African American girl. Yes, indeed. 14. And she was the first Little Leaguer, I believe, to grace the cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yeah.
So Monet Davis, 13-year-old girl whose steely demeanor and ace pitching skills have captivated the nation and powered her team from Philadelphia deep into the Little League World Series, is now gracing the cover of America's most iconic sports publication.
I love it.
I love it, too. So Sports Illustrated's national cover for this week, dated August 25th, features Davis on the mound hurling a pitch toward home plate. Davis and her 70-mile-per-hour fastball propelled her squad through qualifying rounds into the nationally televised final rounds of the World Series, where on Friday she threw a complete game shutout and earned tweets of praise from celebrities near and far. Davis became the first female athlete to throw a shutout in the Little League World Series. Just 18 girls have participated in the event since it was first held in 1947.
Like, awesome.
Yeah. Davis is the first Little Leaguer, male or female, to make the Sports Illustrated iconic cover. While her youth puts her in good company, former tennis prodigies Tracy Austin, Jennifer Capriati, also made it as 13-year-olds in 1976 and 1990, respectively. Venus Williams in 1997, Michelle Kwan in 1998, LeBron James in 2002, Maria Sharapova in 2004, and Serena Williams in 1999 all made it as 17-year-olds. The Sports Illustrated cover featuring Davis will go out to the majority of the country, while some subscribers in California and Northern Midwest will receive issues with alternate covers featuring Kobe Bryant and Kansas City Royals, respectively. So, good for you, Monet Davis.
I love it. First of all, it's like everything. Like, she's doing it for the girls. Yeah. She's doing it for the black girls.
Yes.
And she's doing it for the kids. Like, yeah. What's not to love about this girl? I read a little bit in Sports Illustrated or on the Sports Illustrated website, and she said that, like, they were asking her, like, well, how are you dealing with your newfound fame? And she said that it's creepy because kids don't want to take pictures with her. Adults do. So she said she's a little freaked out about it, but it's still cool.
Good for her. I'm very proud of her, and I hope this takes her very, very far. And I'm so happy that her parents encouraged her to be in this sport and play it. I'm very happy for it. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to you, 13-year-old black girl from Philly on Sports Illustrated.
Ow.
Yes.
Sisters are doing it for themselves. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That was perfect.
Thank you. So, next we have Today I Learned.
Today I Learned.
What did you learn today?
Well, I learned who created the chicken nugget.
Wow.
Yeah. So
it wasn't McDonald's.
It wasn't McDonald's or the McDonald brothers. It wasn't them. Chicken nuggets are delicious. Yes, they are. And I know this isn't a really controversial statement. Despite, you know, I know you've seen the pictures from McDonald's where it's like this pink gobbledygook nastiness stuff before it becomes a chicken nugget. Like, I don't know if you've ever noticed this. I'm gonna tell you guys who made it, but. Have you guys ever noticed that the chicken nuggets from McDonald's are only two shapes? There's a boot and a circle. They're two shapes. Yeah. And I mean, the McDonald's chicken nuggets, I be hitting. What, some honey? Please give it to me. Those chicken nuggets are great, but they're not real chicken. Anyway, the common assumption is that McDonald's was the first to give us these small morsels of food, but that is untrue. The story of the chicken nugget begins with Robert C. Baker, a Cornell professor, and the so-called George Washington Carver of poultry. So, growing up in the Finger Lake region of New York in the small town of Newark, Baker was poised to take over his family's farm, which grew fruit in the summer and raised up to 400 chickens in the winter. His mother made chicken and biscuits every Sunday, only after she chopped off the head and let it die in the pail first, said Baker. Chicken probably did taste different than today, but do you want to put up with that to get to the taste? He was just a young boy when, in 1929, the Great Depression swallowed all of America and hit farmers especially hard. Robert and his family were forced to learn how to save, scrap, and make cheap meals. This became ingrained into Baker's thinking years later when he was attempting to figure out ways to create meals that provided the most amount of food and nutritional value for the least amount of money. He attended the local college, which was Cornell University, in 1939, majored in pomology, the study and cultivation of fruit. The U.S. officially entered into the World War II in 1942, but Baker was exempted from the draft due to his college studies. He graduated in 1943 and went to work for the Cornell Cooperative Extension as a liaison between the university research centers and local farm communities. As the war wound down, so did the demand for chicken. Production supplies, food, and machines increased significantly across America during World War II, literally pulling the country out of the remnants of the economic depression. During this time, poultry farmers had developed ways to grow their output, including advancements in feed and genetics. When the war ended, farmers didn't want to decrease production and sacrifice money in their pockets, so they had to find ways to increase the market for chicken. For years, chickens were only sold whole, making it inconvenient and inefficient for the common household. It was too big for one person to eat, but generally not big enough for a whole family. Additionally, beef and pork were sold in cuts, making them a much more convenient product. Chicken sat third in the American meat hierarchy, behind cow and pig. Perhaps not surprising given that chickens were originally domesticated not for food but for cockfighting. Meanwhile, Baker had begun to develop more of an interest in the other aspect of his family's business, chicken raising. He worked with the National Poultry Improvement Plan, an organization created in the 1930s whose first task was to combat pilorium, which was a disease that caused nearly an 80% mortality rate among baby chickens. He went on to earn a master's in marketing from Pennsylvania State University and was hired soon after by Cornell as an assistant professor in poultry science. Wow, who knew that there was such a thing, poultry science?
I mean, I didn't know.
Right. He was tasked with finding ways to encourage people to eat more chicken. Under this task, Baker became a local celebrity with the development of his Cornell chicken, a delicious grilled chicken recipe that included vinegar, oil, egg, and barbecue sauce he developed while at Penn State. He sold his chicken himself at the New York State Fair, and to this day, you can still get Cornell chicken at the yearly end of the summer fair. In 1957, Baker became the head of the new Department of Food Science at Cornell. With that, he earned himself a lab in which he could develop, test, and taste new chicken products. His lab was stuffed with grinders, blenders, and deboning machines to help his research. So, in 1963, with a student of his, Joseph Marshall, they figured out how to keep ground chicken meat together without a skin while keeping a delicious batter attached to the meat. First, they put the raw chicken in a grinder with salt and vinegar to take out the moisture. Next, they added powdered milk and mashed up grains. This kept it all together. Then they molded the processed chicken into a shape, in this case, a stick, froze them, dipped them in egg batter and cornflake crumbs, and froze them again, this time to negative 10 degrees. This whole process kept everything together, of course, tasted pretty good. They developed a package and put it in the local freezer shelves. Within 6 weeks, they were selling 200 boxes a day. The rest is nugget history.
Wow.
So that's how, I know that was very long for me to get to it. And that's what he said.
Oh!
That's how the chicken nugget was created. So I wonder if, is Purdue chicken named after the school or after the person's last name?
It's a good question.
I think his last name is Purdue. I feel like his name is like Jim Purdue. Anywho, that's how the chicken nuggets came about. I love chicken nuggets.
You know what? Didn't have a chicken nugget until I was like probably in high school.
Whoa, why?
I just thought chicken nuggets were weird. Like something about them were off to me. Like I could never get around that McNugget breading. So I never wanted to try them.
You mean like McNuggets from McDonald's?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I never had like nuggets from anywhere else. I want to say I had to be at least 20, like when I finally tasted like a Wendy's chicken nugget,
those are heaven.
I love Wendy's chicken nuggets though, and they're the only ones that I'll eat.
They're so good. Wendy's chicken nuggets are delicious.
Wait, I'm lying. I love chicken tenders, and I guess those count as nuggets, but I never like considered them as nuggets because their name said tender.
Well, I don't know.
Do they not count to you?
I don't know. I feel like that's just like a chicken breast cut long ways and dipped in batter and fried. Like,
all right, so never mind. I have a nugget then.
Yeah. And that's what I like about Wendy's chicken nuggets. It's like it's a small chicken tender. They're breaded perfectly, and then when you rip them, it actually like is stringy like real chicken does, as opposed to the McNuggets that can't be ripped.
Right. They're mashy.
But that doesn't mean that I don't like McNuggets, because I do, especially dipped in honey. Don't be stingy with the honey. They be so stingy with the sauce packets at the places. Yeah. Anyway, so there you go, and that's where we got the chicken nuggets.
There we go.
What did you learn today?
So I learned how much $100 is worth in each state.
Oh really? Is $100 not worth everything the same?
Nope.
Wow.
So, according to the Tax Foundation, they found out where how much $100 really takes you in each state. I don't know how they did it. I'm not clicking an extra link, but this is what they found out. For example, they said Tennessee is a low price state where $100 will buy what would cost $110.25 in another state that is closer to the national average.
Wow.
So, yeah. You can think of this as meaning that Tennesseans are about 10% richer than the nominal income suggests. So, if we take a look, let's look at Florida, because you live, or you're from Florida.
Yeah.
$100, the value of $100 is actually $100.25 in Florida.
Oh.
In Connecticut, where I'm from, a little lower, $91.41.
Wow.
In New York, $86.66.
Oh, get me out of here.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not surprised at all.
In Arkansas, that would get you $114.16.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. In South Carolina, $110.25. South Dakota, $113.38. California, $88.57. So not too much better.
Dang.
Than New York. Colorado, $98.43. So it looks like, obviously, Mississippi looks like it's the highest at $115.74.
Okay, so that's where I need to move to.
To Mississippi?
Yeah. What's in Ferguson?
What? Well, Mississippi's in Missouri. I'm sorry.
What?
Ferguson is in Missouri. So
oh, yeah, you're right.
So, yeah, let's look at Texas. $103.63. But it actually looks like the worst is Hawaii, $85.32.
Really?
Mm-hmm. D.C. is $84.60.
D.C. is how much?
$84.60.
Dang.
So, yeah.
I don't want to live here anymore. How about Texas? How much is $100?
$103.63.
Okay. It's not as much as Arkansas or Mississippi.
I had said I maybe wanted to move there or Louisiana. Louisiana is $109.41.
Okay, now.
Mm-hmm.
Money gonna get you far.
Yeah. North Carolina, $109.17.
Oh, see, I can move to North Carolina. I definitely could do more in North Carolina.
So it looks like it's more valuable in the South and in the Midwest.
Mm.
Pretty much.
I need to get out of here.
Just looking at it, it's like all the states where you think it would be expensive to live is expensive to live.
Yeah.
California, New York, D.C., Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts. Although they're like closer to the $90 range, I don't want to get over that $100 hump.
Right.
According to this.
Dang, why is it so expensive to live in Hawaii?
Hotel? I really don't know. And I heard that they have like a high homeless population.
In Hawaii?
Mm-hmm.
And they can't get out. I mean, they're so far from everything.
Right.
So it's not like you can just drive to another state and maybe be, you know, better there. Oh, that's awful.
Right.
Ugh.
It's crazy. So yeah, they use data from the Bureau of Economic Analysis, and I guess that's how they went over, state by state. So yeah.
Right. Mississippi, here I come.
I bet if you looked on Craigslist for an apartment, you would find some great ones.
Yes, for $300, two beds, two baths,
balcony,
and I'm not in the hood. What? Why am I here? Honestly, why am I here? But you know what?
What?
With the cheap rent or the cheap cost of living comes a boring ass city.
Right. You right.
No shit to do but drink and like sit around, which is what I do now. So I guess it's not that bad.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. Mississippi, you're not looking too bad.
You're not looking too bad. Not too shabby, Mississippi. Oh my gosh. Woo! So yeah, that's what I learned. I learned that we don't get the most bang for our buck.
We definitely are not getting the most bang for our buck here. Yeah.
That's why I only got $8.57 sent to me. Some bullshit.
Well, we hope that you guys have done all your chores. School's not back in yet, I don't think. Not up north. It definitely is down south. And if my brother is listening, I hope you had a good first week at school. But it is TV time!
Woo! Yeah!
So, we were bored the other day, and we needed something to watch. I wanted something funny. I didn't want to watch, because, you know, with the whole, like, Ferguson thing, Mike Brown, like, just needed something to, like, you know, make me laugh. And I had heard a lot about this show. And so I said, let me sign up to Showtime and I'll watch it. And it is Web Therapy. And Web Therapy is with Lisa Kudrow, who you guys probably know from Friends. She played Phoebe. So... and on this show, she plays Fiona Wallace, who's a therapist who has conceived a new modality of therapy. And so that's why the show is called Web Therapy, because her form of therapy is doing it on the internet and in 3-minute sessions, because she feels that in 3 minutes, you can decipher, you can just attack the problem, and she can cure you of whatever it is that you're dealing with. In her estimation, the traditional 50-minute hour version of therapy gives people too much leeway to talk about irrelevant things. By dramatically shortening the session time, she hopes to get results more quickly. Her sessions take place via webcam over the internet. They are taped in hope of attracting investors into promoting her new technique as a worldwide therapy option. It's a dark comedy. Much of the humor revolves around Fiona's obvious self-interest and how it overshadows her legitimate ability to suss out people's issues quickly and effectively. For instance, in one of the episodes called Sibling Rival Drive, she manages to completely clarify a couple's romantic emotional issues in 30 seconds, but does so only to bring them around so that she can film them discussing more trivial sexual issues that are more shocking. The show is hilarious. I love Lisa Kudrow. She's one of my favorite actresses, for sure.
She's super duper funny.
Yeah.
I've only seen one episode so far, and, it made me laugh. It was so uncomfortable and made me laugh so hard.
A lot of the stuff, I completed all 3 seasons. And, I mean, it's a 30-minute show, so it wasn't hard to do.
Okay, girl.
Yeah.
You better just do it.
Yeah, and it's funny. It was a funny show.
Yeah.
She created the show. I mean, it was out in 2008 where it was actually a web series show. Like, it was on the web, and then Showtime picked it up. And they've had 3 seasons on Showtime. And when they picked it up on Showtime, she got together with Dan Bukatinski, who played James on Scandal, and he's on the show as well. And he cracks, he is so funny. He's so oblivious and so dumb to some things. It's just like, what? Like, it's, everybody on the show actually has, like, a little bit of, like, naivete, and they're just a little bit self-centered. Almost everybody, I don't know, I feel like white people like these kind of shows where they just have these self-centered-ass characters. Where they just really don't care about anybody, especially when it comes to comedy. They love that. They love people who don't care about anybody else. So Lisa Kudrow, you know, she's all out for self. And when it comes to these therapy sessions, she's trying to get more people to invest and into her therapy and get more clients. And anytime she hears that somebody does something, they have 50,000 followers, she's like, oh, well, would you mind tweeting about how you come to therapy with me? And it's like, oh, no, I don't want people to know I'm going to therapy with you. What are you talking about?
Right. Get out of here, lady.
Her voice, she has this weird, this is the voice that we were saying that we were going to talk about earlier. This weird, I don't know, this accent that uppity white people get. I don't get it. And they're not English. It's not an English accent.
They sound like Diane Reeves.
Yes, Diane Reeves. But it's like her voice cracks when she's talking. She's like, oh, well, I don't know. I mean, is this your, like, it's just, her voice is very shaky. And they have these almost British accents, but not British. I don't get it. It's the same accent that Frasier has. It's weird. But the show is funny. So I think you guys should definitely check it out. You should go, if you have Showtime, you can watch it on demand. And if you have if you have a cable subscriber, you can watch it online through Showtime anytime. And all the episodes are on there. And she's had loads of cameos. Courtney Cox, Meryl Streep, another one of my favorite actresses. Minnie Driver, Matt LeBlanc, David Schwimmer. She had almost everybody from Friends on there. Only Jennifer Aniston was the only person that I didn't see on there. Let's see, who else? A lot of people. Rosie O'Donnell was on there for a couple of episodes. She cracks me up. She's one of my favorite, like, comedic actresses. Because she just does it so well. And it just felt like the whole situation felt so real. I felt like it was really happening. And I was just in the room watching it happen. Like, it didn't feel like TV. That's why I like when TV does it. I like it when I don't feel like I'm watching TV.
Me neither.
Yeah, I like when I feel like I'm actually, like, you know, maybe sitting at, like, the subway and I'm watching a situation unfold in real time. I love that. So definitely check out Web Therapy, guys. It's a really funny show, and I'm sure you guys will like it. If you guys like us, you'll like Web Therapy.
Definitely. That was TV time.
That was TV time. All right, what's next? Oh.
It's one of our segments.
A bite of that.
Yeah.
Yum, yum, yummers. So we were looking, you know, at food. And, let me warn you guys now. If you are hungry, I'm sorry. This is just going to make you super hungry. Because when I was looking this stuff up, oh, my God, my stomach was growling. So it is summertime. And you know what people do in the summertime? They make burgers. But every burger is not the same. Just like there are regional accents, there are regional burgers. Who knew?
I didn't know that.
Here's one. This one is from northeastern Mississippi, where I'm going to be moving to, so I should just get used to this. And it's called the Slug Burger. And this is by Thrillist. Thrillist compiled this list. And it's the Regional American Burger Guide. So the Slug Burger from northeastern Mississippi, it's a burger patty mixed with flour and soy meal, and then it's fried. And it was invented by John Weeks back in 1917 in Corinth, Mississippi. And they used to be called Weeks Burgers because dude was totally into himself. But as a style gained popularity in the small northeastern Mississippi town, the moniker Slug Burger was adopted. And that's all you need to know. That the Slug Burger. Do you have the link open?
Yeah.
What other burgers do they have?
I want to try this butter burger because anything with butter tastes good to me. Yes. I'm intrigued because it has butter in the patty, on the patty, or on the bun. I'll take it on the burger, please. I want to try it. It sounds delicious. It sounds buttery goodness.
Buttery.
So it says that it's from Wisconsin. And it's probably, Butterburger is probably the most Wisconsin combination of words ever. And this Wisconsin area specialty style utilizes butter in pretty much every iteration you could imagine. People soak the buns in it before grilling them, drop a pat on the patty while it's cooking, or actually make the patty with butter in it.
My God.
Yes, 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 yes.
That's so buttery.
Yeah.
My mouth is watering. I'm hungry again. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this one is one that I've tried and I love and I've made it at home. The California burger. It's a burger with guacamole or avocado and bacon. Of course, it came from California.
Of course.
The burger style is shrouded in mystery. I love it when people say that. It's shrouded in mystery. But was most likely a symptom of California exporting its culture all over the country ever since the 1970s and 1980s in most places east of the Mississippi. A California burger is a burger with lettuce, tomato, and onion, which are basically like that's standard. But however, closer to the source, a California burger is considered any burger with guacamole or avocado and bacon and is eaten regularly by Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yum.
I'm excited because Connecticut made the list.
We don't
regularly make lists.
What kind of burgers do you guys have there?
So we have steamed burgers. Okay. And I've had a steam burger before. Not from this place. So it's from this place called Ted's Restaurant or Kay LeMay's in Merritt. And it says the hamburger was most likely invented in the state of Connecticut.
Look at that.
And subsequently, the entire town of Meriden, that's actually where T. Sterling Watson is from.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
How cool.
They took the idea and did something weird with it. Generally cooked in a specialized cabinet, steamed cheeseburgers are exactly what they sound like. Burger patties are buffeted with... with piping hot water vapor while the rolls, they're served on at room temperature. And, I've had them and they taste great. I've had them from this place called, it's gonna sound a little bit weird, it's called Blackie's. And, but their burgers are really, really, really good.
Aren't White Castle Burger steam burgers?
I have no clue, honestly.
I think they are.
I've never had a White Castle Burger.
Ooh, well, I mean, they're delicious. However, they will do a number on your tummy. What comes out afterwards, it's not worth it. But they're, because they're so tiny, you can eat, like, 10 in one sitting, and you'd be like, oh, my God, these are so good. They're delicious. Because it's just the steamed burger, cheese, and, like, these little, like, chopped up, sautéed, delicious onions. It's, oh, my God, so good. And you know what? Now that I eat meat again, I definitely need to make my way back to White Castle. Because I haven't had White Castle since I was like 9 or 10. That was the last time I had White Castle.
This particular place in Connecticut that I've gone to that makes the steam burgers, their specialty is relish. And they make their own relish. Like, it's a hot relish. And they sell it like it's like, if you ask for it with ketchup like I do, they're like, they look at you funny because you didn't order it with relish.
You didn't order it with relish.
Yeah. But apparently their relish is popping, but I don't like pickles like that. I only like relish in my potato salad, so.
I like relish. I don't know. I've never had it on a burger, but I do like relish. I'd try it. My mouth is watering thinking about it, so I think it'd be good.
Okay, what else?
So this burger here, I've heard about this burger on Food Network. On Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, and I've also seen it on Man vs. Food. And it's from Minnesota, Minneapolis, Minnesota, to be exact, and it's called the Juicy Lucy.
Ooh!
It's a burger patty stuffed with molten American or cheddar cheese. So, like, I saw them make it. So they, like, take the, you know, the uncooked, the raw ground beef, and then they just, like, stuff a piece of cheese in it and then put more ground beef on top of it and then they make the patty and then you cook it. And it was also on like Food Wars because like there were two different places that said that they were the ones who created the Juicy Lucy. Like they're the ones who started the Juicy Lucy thing. And so like the guy went to this place and then he went to the other place and they had to like, he had to decide whose Juicy Lucy was better. I don't remember who he picked, but I don't care. I want to go. So, surprisingly, it's not from Wisconsin, even though there's cheese in the middle of it. This cheese lover's dream burger has oft-debated origin, see, like I was saying, but it was most likely first served at a place called Matt's Bar sometime in the late 1950s when a customer requested a burger with cheese in the center, and Matt lovingly obliged. When he bit into it, the customer apparently exclaimed, what's a Juicy Lucy? So, that's where it got the name from. Presumably because vulgarity hadn't been yet invented. Soon after, places like 5-8 Club began laying claim to the burger too, and Minneapolis folks knew they were onto something big. I need to try this. I think that would be the only reason why I would go to Minnesota to one of these, because I don't see anything else bringing me there.
You don't even want to see where Prince lived.
Okay, that too then. Those are the two things that would bring me there.
Okay, one more. And this one comes from South Florida via Cuba or Cuba. I don't know how y'all say it.
Cuba.
But but it is the Frita Cubana. Did I say it funny?
I don't want to say you said it funny. You sound very American when you say it.
I'm sure I did. I didn't really want to say it. But anyways. It says it's a thin beef patty seasoned with paprika, topped with shoestring potatoes, diced onions, and spiced ketchup. Mm-hmm. They had me at potatoes. My mouth started watering immediately as I read it. Mm-hmm. So it said it's not exactly from South Florida, but the Fritas, they're not, which are not just more than feminine versions of Fritos, are quite popular there and are sometimes referred to as Cuban hamburgers. They first appeared in Miami in 1962 at Frida's Domino, which is still serving burgers today. I want to try.
Yeah, fritas cubanas are really good. Those are...
Oh, so she had to show me how to say it.
She
had to show me how to say it. That's what's up, Didi. I remember.
I just channeled my inner, what's her name? Celia Cruz.
She had a...
Anyway, those are delicious. Wait, I just want to do one more. One more.
Okay.
One more. Okay. And it is the Luther Burger.
Oh, gosh.
The Luther Burger is a bacon cheeseburger with glazed donuts instead of buns.
Oh, girl. I can't believe this exists.
I couldn't do a whole one. I could only do half.
You say that now.
Well, that's what I would like. That's my intentions.
Right.
My intentions are to go in there and only eat half of it because it sounds like an immediate heart attack. It's from Georgia, and they don't know if it was Luther Vandross's favorite, or if it was like actually invented by him in a moment of bunless desperation. But it's from Decatur, Georgia. There's a restaurant called Mulligan's uses the burger, rumored beginnings, as the inspiration for its donut sandwich, the bacon burger, which its owner brought to the national scale in 2005 on the Tonight Show.
Yo. Okay, can you imagine if this was, like, real desperation and they really did run out of buns and Luther Vandross was like, oh, what do you have? What do you have? Like, why?
Use a donut.
Like, I can't even imagine that happening. Like, why would a regular restaurant have donuts? Is that, like, a thing?
Some restaurants do. Some restaurants, like, you know, they serve breakfast and they serve lunch, if it was like at a diner or whatever, or something like that. Like, they have all types of pastries.
You're right.
So, it's possible.
Thank goodness they weren't Boston cream. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, gross. I love Boston cream, but that's disgusting on a burger. Ew.
You never know.
Oh, you know what? I don't ever know. I won't ever know either.
I mean, shoot. That could have been a loser. It could have been great.
I don't know, but I definitely do want to. If Krispy Kreme got one, I definitely want to try it.
I mean, you can make them at your house.
You right?
This sounds like an experiment.
This does sound like an experiment, and I'd be happy to use a Dunkin' Donuts glazed donut because I'm not going all the way into the city just for Krispy Kreme.
I know, right?
Yo, they need to build more. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, and they need to have it hot all the time.
Hot now.
Not now, but right now.
Now, with all of that, I'm kind of thirsty. Is it cocktail time?
It is cocktail time, yes.
All right, well, what's the cocktail of the week?
Well, the cocktail of the week is cyber treatment in spirit of web therapy.
Yeah.
So for this, you're going to need 8 strawberries, whole and halved, 5 big fresh basil leaves, 1/8 of fresh lime wedged, 1.5 cups of tonic water, 2 ounces of gin, and 1 tablespoon of simple syrup and ice. So what you're going to do is, in a mixing glass, add the strawberries, basil, and lime. Muddle them thoroughly to release the juices and oils. In a small bowl, mix the sugar with the amount of tonic water just to dilute it. When it's been diluted, add it to the mixing glass, add the gin and the tonic water, and strain everything into drinking glasses full of ice. Garnish with more strawberries, basil, and lime, if that's what you want to do.
All right. And that's the cyber treatment.
Yes.
That sounds delicious.
Mm-hmm.
Great summer drink.
It's still summertime.
Yes. It's still summertime, and it's going to be herbaceous because of the basil leaves, nice and fresh. because the strawberries and gin and tonic always go well together. So, and of course, with a little kick of lime, oh my God, sounds so refreshing. I'm thirsty too. I'm thirsty and I'm hungry. Great.
Oh, right. Oh, man. So with all that said, was that our show?
I think that was.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, good show.
Yeah, it was a great show. We got political. We got hungry. We got inspired.
Yes. We went through the motions on this episode.
So, Dee Dee.
Yeah.
Where can we find you?
Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. And it's Lucky Stars, LuckyStarz. Where can we find you, Ari?
You can find me on Twitter and the Instagram at Ariel Cherie. And you can find the show at catnapsandcognac.podbean.com. You can catch us on Twitter, catnaps, the letter N, cognac. And you can find us on the Spreaker Network, also catnaps and cognac, or on iTunes. And you can send us an email with anything you want to send us an email on, except for spam, at catnaps.andcognac@gmail.com.
And don't forget to find us on iTunes.
I said that.
You did? Okay, I missed it. Okay, my bad. Well, I guess that's it.
Yeah, that's it. So, we'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, I'm going to my favorite burger place. I'm going to eat those burgers and stuff my face. I'm going to shake it fast. Too much and much. I say, Marky D, I love my lunch.
Burger today, or two, or three.